When everyone in power is saying one thing, we should at least pause to consider alternative views. Today, we're going to be looking at the dominant narrative regarding the Russia-Ukraine war and why Catholics should be at least cautious about wholeheartedly embracing it. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. So we're talking about the Russian-Ukraine war. I do have a podcast about this from a few weeks ago before war broke out, which explains a lot of the background to what's going on. I did at the time say that I did not think Putin was going to invade. Obviously, I was wrong about that. But at least that gives you some context if you listen to that podcast about just what led to this, that it's not didn't just come out of the blue, but things led to this. Now, before I get started, I just want to say a few preliminary remarks. First is I recognize that this is an emotional topic, that when we're talking about war, when we're talking about the potential for America to enter a war, when we're talking about literally the potential of a nuclear war, people are going to get emotional. And I know that, in fact, that challenging the dominant narrative, like I'm going to do today, it does make people upset. I've already noticed that a number of people have been very upset that Crisis has not gone along with the kind of the neocon narrative behind this, that most of the media is also embracing. And I know people have left, have told me they're not going to read Crisis anymore because of this. And I understand that. And I know Crisis, of course, has a history, a neocon flavored history at times. And so I'm not trying to reject those people or anything like that. But I feel like we have to be rational here. We have to be Catholic. We have to think of this, not just go along with what everybody else is saying, but go with what we think is the right thing to do. And I do hope that we can disagree in charity as well, that we can have a disagreement about these issues without calling people names or anything like that. In fact, I the first thing I want to say is that I just want to say up front, if you think that anything I say here today makes me a Putin shill or a Putin apologist, that's just an unserious take. It's a cartoon version of the world. And so I have a hard time taking seriously anybody who would accuse me of being a Putin shill or anything like that. My standard when it comes to military conflict to war is first and foremost, just war theory. That comes first. Second would come the American Constitution as far as who's allowed to, how we're allowed to enter into war, which we've completely obliterated over the past 30 years. We just allow the president to do whatever he wants without Congress declaring war. But taking back a step, just war theory. That is the standard every Catholic should have when it comes to military conflict. And when it comes to that standard, Russia's invasion of Ukraine doesn't even come in the same zip code as just war theory. There's no way that you can justify what Putin did going into Ukraine last week. It's not a just war. And so we do condemn it. And I condemn it. And I think anybody rational would condemn it. That being said, the world is not a Marvel movie. We are not made up of all completely good guys like the Avengers and all completely bad guys like Thanos or something like that. And when we start to look at the world like that in this very cartoon version of the world, I think that's where we really start to run into a lot of problems. That's when we start to cause more problems because we have this cartoonish view of the other side. And we have a cartoonish view of ourselves. We're the good guys. We did nothing wrong. We can do no wrong. Putin, Russia, they're the bad guys. They do everything wrong. I think we need to escape from that cartoonish view. So if you want to just call me a Putin shill or apologist for anything I say here, go ahead. But I'm not going to have a serious discussion with you because you're not interested in having a serious discussion. The second thing I want to mention is I do focus a lot, and I have in the past, and I will hear a lot on the American NATO side of things, the things that we do wrong. And the reason I do that is, frankly, because I'm American. And most of our audience is American, or at least in the Western world. I would guess that most people who are watching this, listening to this, are in Europe, Australia. And when I look at the numbers, America, Canada, that's where most people come from. So we're part of the West. And so I think our Lord's command that we should first look at the log in my own eye before looking at the speck in somebody else's applies here. Now, this isn't to say that there's only a speck in Putin's eye and there's a log in Biden's or something like that. It's simply to state that the principle should be we should look at our own side first and we should look at what we've done wrong before we go out and blame others. I mean, that's really what we're supposed to do in the Christian life. That's what we're supposed to do here too, is not to take the blame for everything that's not our fault, but to say, okay, have we done anything? And can we do things in the future better so these type of things happen? So if I was Russian and I was living in Russia, I hope my podcast would be about what Putin is doing wrong and why and what he needs wrong, because that'd be my perspective. But from here, my perspective is, on the Western side, what is NATO and America doing? And I think what we really need to see is there is truth. There is reality. The reality lies between the two extremes. Between Russia is the evil empire that must be crushed by America. And on the other side, America is the great Satan that must be blamed for everything. I don't think either of those two things are true. And I think we need to be careful that we don't go too far in either direction. I think the dominant narrative is that Russia is the evil empire that must be crushed. That's what we're hearing today over and over again as the war drums are beating. So let's talk about that dominant narrative a little bit. I have a problem with dominant narratives, and I admit it freely. And what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is when everybody gets all ginned up for some cause and everybody's like, oh, we have to back this. We have to be this. If you don't do this, you're a terrible person. And you get everybody saying this, the media, both the dominant like CNN, MSNBC, but also Fox News. And even you see that on every side where everybody's like behind this. We saw this last in March of 2020. We saw the dominant narrative was when COVID hit, if you did not think that lockdowns were a great idea, then you wanted to kill grandma. There was no other option. And I saw it firsthand on Twitter and social media when I would say something like, well, perhaps shutting down our entire economy isn't such a great idea. And immediately I was told, you want 2 million people to die. You want grandma to die. When I said, oh, hey, maybe mask mandates aren't a good idea. Oh, you want grandma to die. You want millions of people to die. And there was this idea that there was only two different views. Either you wanted complete lockdowns, you wanted the state to take over everything and shut down our lives because COVID was this horrible virus that's going to destroy all of humanity. Or on the other side, you thought everything, you were accused that you thought COVID didn't even exist, that it didn't even harm anybody. But the truth, of course, as we now see 2 years later, is somewhere in between. And actually it leans more towards the against the dominant narrative of the time that COVID wasn't this terrible disease, but it was a real disease. People really did die from it, but the lockdowns were completely unnecessary. I also remember, I'm old enough to remember seeing this dominant narrative happen in 2003 in the buildup to the Iraqi war, the second Iraqi war. After 9/11, we wanted blood. And I think it was justifiable for America to go after Osama bin Laden, for example, because he's the one who did 9/11. We had a just reason to go after him. Now, of course, instead, we went after Afghanistan, did regime building and all that. And that's terrible. I've talked about that before in the podcast as well. But then all of a sudden, the American leaders wanted to get everybody all excited, America, that really Saddam's our big problem, weapons of mass destruction, we need to go into Iraq. And when really it was just George W. Bush trying to make up for daddy not taking care of business 15 years before, 13 years before, something like that. That was a complete idea of the dominant narrative. You saw it, I mean, CNN, Fox News, everybody was for it. We had to go in there. We had to do it. And if you suggested we shouldn't, basically you want Washington, D.C. being nuked by Saddam tomorrow, or at least Israel nuked by Saddam tomorrow. And so what happens is the dominant narrative isn't always completely wrong. Like, for example, with the COVID one, it's not that COVID didn't exist. It's not that COVID wasn't a serious disease for certain people. But it's not that it's completely wrong. It's that it makes us all irrational. It makes it so you cannot challenge any point of the narrative. You have to be completely behind it 100% or you're on the other side. And we're seeing that right now with this whole Russian-Ukraine thing. If you dare suggest that maybe, just maybe, America and NATO should not, is partly to blame for what's happening, but also that we should maybe hold back on trying to attack Russia, then now all of a sudden you're a Putin stooge. Now all of a sudden you're an apologist for Russia. But really what happens is the dominant narrative is something that the ruling class uses in its efforts to basically increase and consolidate its power. It uses it so that we can all get behind them, and so they use it for their own power base. And it causes people to say some of the craziest things. Like, for example, a number of people, prominent people, politicians and whatnot, were saying something to the effect of, we need to institute a no-fly zone over Ukraine against Russia. The U.S. should, or NATO should. And but they what that means is, if a Russian fighter jet went over Ukraine, we would shoot it down. If that's not an act of war, I don't know what is. If that's not an escalation, I mean, here we are saying, and they're trying to claim that that's not us really getting involved. That's not us going to war. But that's exactly what it is. I mean, you don't think Putin and Russia would see it like that? That's exactly how they see it. And they'd be justified in that case. If we shut down a Russian fighter, that means we've entered into the war. And that means all bets are off. And we can go straight to World War III. But people were saying this because they've gotten so behind the dominant narrative, so emotional about this, and so unwilling to see any other viewpoint, that they want to just go in and attack. They want to do something. I mean, Sean Hannity, I think it was last night, said something in fact of, there's a convoy of Russian troops coming in, and it's making its way to Ukraine, making its way, I think, to Kiev. And Hannity wants us to bomb it, but then not say who did it, like NATO, but nobody would take credit for doing it. And that way Russia wouldn't know who to attack. That's insane. I mean, is Putin going to say, oh, I don't know who it was who bombed our convoy, so I'm just not going to do anything? Of course not. But this is what happens when everybody just gets so upset and so much behind. We got to do something. We got to do something. And we see this emotionalism in the Russophobia that's going on, the hatred of all things Russian. Now, I want to stay first and foremost. I do have a great and deep appreciation of Russian history, Russian culture. I love the Russian people. I love Russia. I've read a lot about it. My wife, I think I've mentioned this before, she was a Russian studies major in college, and that really made me grow to appreciate it. That doesn't mean, of course, you're behind Putin. But hating Russia doesn't mean that's not what you have to do because you're against Putin either. But we see this, like, for example, in the state of Ohio, the governor banned, and other states did this well, banned vodka sales from that based out of Russia. What does that do? That's virtue signaling at its best. We see there's a university, I think it's in Italy, that's banning the reading of Dostoevsky. I mean, hello, Dostoevsky is exactly what we should be reading now if we want to understand what's going on. But yet they want to ban it out of this idea of, okay, we're against Russia. We're with everybody. We're for Ukraine. So we're gonna ban Dostoevsky. That's insane. I saw where Nike is banning online sales in Russia. Nike, that paradigm of virtue, which uses slave labor, says nothing about in China. It says nothing about the abuses going on in China. Apple, I think, is doing the same thing. Again, they say nothing against China. Yet they're more than willing to condemn Russia and all of Russia, not just Putin. Okay, that'd be fine. But all the Russians, like, no, you're all terrible. And so it really does get to the point where we all fall into this hatred of all things Russia. And we look at them as Thanos, as the Marvel supervillain that can do no right. And we must do everything to destroy. And that's what leads to wars. To greater escalation wars. I mean, we have a war in Russia, Ukraine. If we want to escalate, that's what you do. You get all the populace and hating Russia as much as possible, not just Putin, but hating Russia as much as possible and seeing them as the villain. And then you get people behind irrational and immoral decisions to escalate the war. And I do think Catholics fall into this just as much as anybody. I saw a story the other day that everybody was sharing in the Catholic world about that the Ukrainian Catholic, somebody in the Ukrainian Catholic Church said that they had information that Russia was planning to bomb the Cathedral of St. Sophia in Kiev, which is a Ukrainian Catholic cathedral. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It would be tragic if it was bombed. But everybody relayed this as if it was now an actual fact that Russia really was playing that. We have no actual information that Russia was playing that. We have a Ukrainian Catholic official who said it, and they might be right. But what I noticed was Catholics were very quick to share this, to demonize Russia as the ultimate evil that we must destroy. And like I said, there's no factual base. Now, if that cathedral gets destroyed, it'll be horrific and it'll be immoral, just like Putin's invasion is. But let's not be so quick to believe every terrible thing. You saw that with the information that came out, particularly at the beginning of the war. everything that was shared that would make Ukrainian look great and Russia look terrible. Now, I'm not saying Ukrainian isn't right to defend themselves. Of course they are. But we start sharing false stories. Like we show pictures of Zelensky, Ukraine President Zelensky in combat gear. Like he's at the front lines right now. Well, he wasn't. We share the story about Snake Island, about the courageous Ukrainians that were defending it and they were all killed. That didn't happen. We share the story about how, what was the other story? There was another one. Oh, the ghost of Kiev, a ghost of Ukraine or something like that. The fighter pilot who shot down all the Russian fighters. It wasn't true. We also, now I'll say on the other side, we also, I saw a lot, some people on the other side sharing that Putin was actually, what he's really doing is he was just taking out the bio weapon facilities that the U.S. had in Ukraine. I don't think there's any proof for that either. We basically just wanted to share things that backed our narrative. But what it's doing is we're demonizing the enemy as much as possible, which makes reconciliation and negotiation impossible. It makes it, we're basically, all these things do is they try to get support for World War III, frankly. And we want to see Russia as the new Soviet Union. Really, this is just a Soviet Union too. That's all it is. But there's the facts do not back that up. I'm not saying Putin is right here, but they're not the Soviet Union. In the 1950s, there was a clear distinction between America and the Soviet Union. That distinction, I would argue, is not so clear today. That I'm not saying that means Russia is good. What I'm saying is that means America has not done so many great things. And I think Russia isn't as bad as the Soviet Union today, isn't as bad as the Soviet Union was in the 1950s, for example, under Stalin, for example. Putin is not the new Stalin. But America, it ain't 1950s in America anymore either. So we do these things, though, to make us feel better. And I will say, though, that I just have a natural distrust of the dominant narrative. And I think we all had to take a step back. And we have to be rational about this because this is what we're going to do. This is what is going to make possible an actual peace happening instead of just let's go in there, guns a-blazing, see what we can do to destroy the enemy. Now, here's a couple things I think we need to consider when we look at this from an American perspective and being willing to criticize our own point of view and willing to see the Russian point of view as well as the Ukrainian point of view. We need to see all the sides of this. We need to see what America, NATO thinks, what Russia thinks, and what Ukraine thinks. I think one thing that we do in America is we defend our foreign policy without exception as never being wrong. That's a lot of Americans do that. We assume what we're doing is the just thing. I think we just look at the Iraq war in our invasion of Iraq in 2003, 2004, and ongoing. And if we look at that objectively, you cannot argue that our invasion of Iraq is more moral than Putin's invasion of Ukraine. Note, I'm not saying that means Putin's invasion of Ukraine is moral. What I'm saying is the invasion of Iraq by America was also immoral. Neither of them met the just war theory. And in fact, as of right now, our invasion of Iraq was worse. Now, I do think it's very possible that over time, this invasion of Ukraine is going to be far worse than what we did in Iraq. But at this point, it's worse. Same with our 20 years in Afghanistan. There was no justification for that, for being there forever. But Americans, we don't want to say that. We're not willing to say that that was wrong. But I think we do need to look at that. I think that the reason we need to look at that is obviously our invasion of Iraq had nothing to do with Putin's invasion of Ukraine, although you could argue that other countries do look at us as an empire that basically invades other countries we don't like and is willing to use military force when we don't like something. And that makes them a little bit nervous. It makes Russia a little bit nervous. But I think what it does also should make us a little bit more humble, a little bit more humble to not just assume we're always in the right. Now, I also want to say this to conservatives who are watching this particularly. We don't believe our government on a lot of things like the COVID narrative, the pushing of transgenderism, the pushing of abortion, they're trying to confiscate our guns, all these things. We don't believe them at face value. Why do we believe them when it comes to foreign policy? Why do we believe what they say when it comes to foreign policy? I just think that's ludicrous to do that. I'm not saying they're always wrong. They're not always wrong. They said that Russia would invade Ukraine. They were right about that. But what it does do is it should give us a moment of reflection to say, well, hold on a second. Let's not believe everything they say at face value. maybe there's some truth in what they're saying, but also maybe there's a lot of falsehood in there that they're saying just for their own purposes. And so I think here's some things I think we need to consider when we're looking at this conflict over in Ukraine. The first is we can't just take out Putin. We can't just bomb Moscow. This is not a simple thing where we just say, okay, let's go take out Putin and all our problems will be solved. You would think that by the way people talk, a lot of people are talking today. We need to find ways to negotiate. You may not like it. I may not like it. But the reality is we have to do that. We can't just simply give Putin a bloody nose and act like everything will be fine then. The fact is, the worst consequence of this is the literal worst consequence for the world, which is nuclear war. There's nothing worse than that when it comes to political-wise. Obviously, sin is far worse, but when it comes to politics, nothing's worse than a nuclear war. And if things go wrong here, that's exactly what could happen. And so we need to know that. And therefore, we need to be willing to yes, give in to certain demands. Yes, negotiate. Yes, be willing to say, okay, Russia has certain things they want that it would be a good idea to let them have. Does that mean they get everything they want? Of course not. Do we just let Putin just ride through Europe or something like that? I don't think he wants to do that. But let's say if he did, we would just let that happen. No, I'm not saying that. But I am saying, yeah, there's certain things like, for example, NATO membership for Ukraine. Do we really have to have Ukraine as part of NATO? I mean, honestly, let's just take a step back on NATO. I don't think NATO should exist. I definitely don't think the United States should be part of NATO. NATO does nothing for us, and we do everything for NATO. As Americans, that's what I'll say. It is simply, it does nothing for us, but all it does is negative for us, and it's positive for others. So a country like Ukraine, I totally get why some of the leaders in Ukraine want to be part of NATO. But I don't get why we want them to be part of NATO. I don't get why we want most of the nations that have added, that have been added to NATO. I don't, and again, I don't get why NATO itself needs to exist. Why we should be willing to commit our troops, our men and women to battle over the borders across the world just doesn't make any sense to me. Because why would we do it, for example, why don't we do that in Asia or in Africa or South America? We don't do it there. We shouldn't have to do it in Europe. And so I really think that we need to be willing to say things like, no, Ukraine isn't going to be part of NATO. And that's just the way it is. I think we should be willing to say that. Now, people will say, oh, wait a minute, you're conceding to Putin. You're conceding to Putin. You can't do that. You have to be strong against a strong leader. No, I don't think that's the way that's the right way to look at it. Because the fact of the matter is that Putin's already invaded. And so he clearly doesn't have a problem doing that. But I think if we just simply say, okay, we're going to add Ukraine to the NATO family, and now we're going to go to war for that area as well as all these other areas, I just think is insane. I don't think we can do that. We also need to realize that the world is getting tired of us dictating the terms to the world. And I think we need to realize since the fall of the Cold War, the only good thing about the Cold War was it kept both sides in check on some level. I mean, obviously, if either side had their way, they would have taken over the whole world. But the problem is since the fall of the Soviet Union, America has felt like we can just dictate terms. If we want to invade Iraq, we will. If we want to invade Afghanistan, we will. If we want to do this, we do. If we don't want to do that, we do. But we don't realize that what we need to do is this creates enemies. This creates people who hate us. I mean, if you look at what Osama bin Laden said before 9/11, leading up to 9/11, what he was upset about, it seems like we don't really want to listen to that. We just think he's crazy. To act like everybody's crazy is just, that's crazy. Osama bin Laden made very clear the thing that upset him the most was U.S. military bases in Saudi Arabia. He did not like the fact that the U.S. military power was in the Middle East. And the fact is, would we like it if there was Chinese military bases in America? I don't think so. We wouldn't like it if they were in Canada either. And so we need to understand that that's the way the world looks at us. Now, does that mean we pull out of these places? I would say yes, but I understand even if we don't want to argue that, you at least should understand that makes people very suspicious of you. That makes people upset and not willing to trust you when and treat you as somebody other than just a big bully on the world stage. Another thing we need to do is we need to understand, and this is where I know people get upset because people are very much right now pro-Ukraine, we love Ukraine. And here's the thing, I want to make it very clear. the people of Ukraine, the innocent people of Ukraine, our prayers do need to be with them. And we do need to be thinking about them and considering that it's awful what they have to go through. But we also have to understand that this, again, not a cartoon version of the world. It's not that Russia, all bad, does everything wrong. Ukraine, all good, did nothing wrong. And also, even looking at Ukraine as a single entity, I think is a mistake. Because if you know the history of Ukraine, particularly the last 30 years since it became independent of the Soviet Union, you know it's not exactly a homogeneous country. It's not united as one. It's a divided country. On the east, you have the more predominantly Russian-speaking, ethnically Russian, and even more pro-Russian communities. On the west side, you have much more Ukrainian-speaking. They're much more pro-West, want to join, be part of Europe. And that's a real divide there. That's not something that's made up. It's a real divide. And so what you've seen in elections and coups over the past 30 years in Ukraine is that divide, because at one point a more pro-Western candidate will win, another point a more pro-Russian or at least less pro-Western candidate will win. And so there really is a divide. It's not quite as clear-cut. I know the other day, New York Times had this map where they showed all the migrant, all the refugees leaving Ukraine to go in the West, to go to Poland and other areas in the West. But then they also noted that there were what they call migrants going to Russia from the East Ukraine, which it was interesting that one was refugees and the other is migrants. Why were they different? They're both escaping fighting. But the fact that some were escaping fighting to go into Russia, that's against the dominant narrative. So you have to at least make it sound a little bit different, that they're just migrants. They're not refugees. The fact is they're all refugees. And so the fact is that to look at Ukraine as this homogenous group that is completely united against Russia is just simply not true. It's just not factual. Does that justify Putin? Again, of course it doesn't. If you think that, then you're having this cartoon version of the world and you're refusing to see the world as a little bit more than just Thanos versus the Avengers. Another thing that I think is very important, I saw somebody on Reddit, I don't know why I go on Reddit sometimes, but like one of those popular stories of the day was supposedly a story from 1994 that Ukraine agreed to give up their nuclear weapons to Russia in exchange that Russia promised never to invade or attack them. And everybody's saying, see, look how terrible this is. First of all, I don't know if that story is true. I didn't bother looking it up, but let's assume it's true. Well, what wasn't noted is that it was just a few weeks ago that President Zelensky of Ukraine, he said that they do want to start having a nuclear capability in Ukraine. And I think it's understandable that Russians would be nervous about that, about all of a sudden Ukraine having, when you have the pro-Western, anti-Russian leader of Ukraine talking about developing nuclear weapons. That's gonna scare people. Think about what we do, what Americans do when Iran talks about developing, there's a possibility of Iran developing nuclear weapons. We freak out. And I understand why we freak out. But so why wouldn't Russia freak out at the idea of Ukraine having nuclear weapons right on their doorstep? I mean, it's understandable at least. It doesn't justify attacking at this point, but it does make it understandable why Russians would be behind this, some of them. Another thing I want to note about the whole dominant narrative is that in the Catholic world, at least, what happens is that we want to back the oppressed and the poor and those, the innocent. And that's a great thing. That's good. And so what happens is you see all of us put up our Ukrainian flags. We want to help the poor Ukrainians. And that's a good thing. Obviously, donating to charities that help the suffering in Ukraine, that's good. However, if it then builds to now we have to do something about this to stop it, where America has to do something to stop the suffering of Ukrainians, that's where I think we've crossed a line that we should not cross. The fact of the matter is Catholic social teaching does not require that nations defend any nation that's in trouble anywhere in the world. Think about it like this. In my own personal life, I am obligated to defend my family. I have to defend. If somebody attacks my house, I am obligated morally to defend my family. If somebody, however, attacks somebody and does a home invasion two towns over, I have no moral obligation to defend them and to help them. There's concentric circles that go out of our obligations. And so America is not bound, duty bound, to defend every suffering person in the world. And I think because that's just, first of all, the moral obligation isn't that we have to defend everybody in the world. Secondly, I think we have to realize how it can cause further problems. That's what we'd never want to recognize, is the blowback, is the unintended consequences we have. Like Afghanistan, we went in there supposedly first just to get bin Laden. Very quickly, it became clear we were doing more regime building, topple the Taliban, everything like that. We're in there for 20 years. All that happened was, as many good men and women died, there was a lot of suffering. And in the end, what's the result? It's no different than it was when we went in 20 years ago. I think you could argue very much that our going to war in Iraq helped, and our other incursions into Middle East has caused all kinds of problems, including 9/11. And so we have these things where there's a real chance of worse things happening. And when we're talking about war with Russia, like I said already, the worst possible thing is now on the table, which is World War III and a nuclear war. And so, yes, we should love and care for and be compassionate towards Ukrainians, but that does not mean we should be going to war over it. And I also would just challenge those who have popped up their Ukrainian flags on their social media handles and everywhere. Where were your Yemen flags over the past few years? For at least, I think it's like 8 years now, there's been a war in Yemen that the United States has basically allowed Saudi Arabia to attack. There's been a genocide there, and we've done nothing. We've said nothing. Nobody cares. Is it ever in the news that the Yemenis are being attacked and killed and slaughtered? No. So why is it that all of a sudden now we care so much more for Ukrainians being attacked than we do for those in Yemen who are being attacked? I think that seems to be a little bit of a double standard. I think we should care about both, but we don't have an obligation to fight in either situation. We also have to remember that President Zelensky of Ukraine, he wants us to enter into the war, and I don't blame him for wanting that. His duty is to protect Ukraine above all else. He has to think of his own people, his own country first. I don't blame him for wanting Western help, military help, and even for us to attack. I get that. However, we have to take a step back and say, no, the potential unintended consequences would be far worse than the actual what we could achieve there. And so we need to really pull out from this rhetoric that makes it sound like we're going to get militarily involved. I think we can't do that. So what should we do? That's probably what we all want to ask. What should we do? Obviously, my honest answer is I don't know, and neither do you. None of us really know what we should do. I would say, though, what we want to do is we want to have rational heads, cooler heads prevail on both sides, both in Russia and in America and NATO headquarters. We want the cooler heads to prevail. We don't want to go into this in some emotional way, like we have to get back at Russia. They didn't pay enough for what they did in Soviet Union. I've seen that. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe people are saying that like, because the Soviet Union, after it went down, we didn't like punish the Russians enough afterwards. That's why this happened. So we need to punish them now. That's insane. That is insane. No, none of the Soviet leaders are in charge anymore. And I know the whole Putin was a KGB agent thing people love to say. Read an actual biography of him. He wasn't some high level KGB operative who was like making policy decisions. He was just a regular officer. And, you know, he was not in charge of the Soviet Union, is what I'm trying to say. So what we need to do is, first of all, if cooler heads prevail, we need to understand that we do need to be willing to give. We need to be willing to negotiate in this situation. The ultimate goal here is to avoid World War III. That's what we have to realize. That's the ultimate evil here that we have to avoid no matter what. That's what we have to avoid. And so that's the only thing I say. What should we do? Have cooler heads prevail and understand that we should not do anything that leads to World War III. And a lot of the dominant narrative today is doing exactly that. It's leading to America entering into the war, making it a hot war that we're in, and it could very quickly escalate to World War III. Putin has said basically that he cannot conceive of a world without Russia in it. And I think it's true that if we want to create a world without Russia in it, which is what a lot of dominant narrative sounds like to them, He'd rather the world not exist than a world without Russia. And if that's the case, and I think it is, we need to realize that and not go in this guns a-blazing and try to figure out how we can destroy him. Because if we do, I think he'd rather see no world than a world without a Russia that, as he perceives it. I think we need to know that. So be willing to question the dominant narrative is what I encourage Catholics to do. Even if you take heat, you're going to be called a Putin stooge. You're going to be called a Putin shill. You're going to be called, you know, you hate, you want Ukrainians to die or something like that. It's the same thing that happened when we pushed against the COVID narrative. We want grandma to die. There's no courage in saying Putin is bad. We all know that. We all know Putin shouldn't invade. But there's no courage in saying that. What the courage is to saying, okay, what did we do that led to this situation? And what can we do to get out of this situation, to de-escalate the situation, riling everybody up and getting them all hatred for all things Russian, hatred for and making Putin out to be Thanos and U.S. out to be the Avengers. That is not going to lead to peace. And that's what we ultimately want. I hope as Catholics that we want peace in the world. Okay, I think I'm going to end it there. Hopefully I annoyed just about everybody, at least by one thing I said, but I hope it got people to think about the fact that we really do need to step back from the emotionalism of the dominant narrative that's being pushed today. Take a step back, let cooler heads prevail, and really pray and fast for peace. Okay, everybody, until next time, God love you.